right. So, we've got a pretty interesting pair of books to look at this time. Ecclesiastes, the one that's, pretty famous for its almost cynical realism,
Yeah, definitely.
And then Song of Songs, which is all about celebrating love and sensuality.
Yeah.
Not exactly what you think of when you think of, like, books that go together.
Right.
So what happens when we sort of like dive into both of them? What can they tell us about life, death, and all that stuff in between? Well,
Yeah.
that's what we're going to be looking at today.
Right. Precisely.
And luckily, we've got expert speaker here with us to help us unpack these texts.
It's a challenge, but an exciting one for
Yeah.
sure. I
Yeah.
mean, they really do sort of, represent these two extremes of human experience.
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah.
you've got the wrestling with these big existential questions in Ecclesiastes,
Yeah.
and then you've got this like, full embrace of the beauty of the present moment in Song of Songs.
Yeah, it's interesting. Makes you wonder what kind of conversation these two authors would have had.
Oh, absolutely.
But I guess before we get too ahead of ourselves, let's maybe start with Ecclesiastes
Okay.
and this whole idea of life under the sun.
Yeah.
I think, most people, when they hear Ecclesiastes, they think life is meaningless.
Right.
Like that's kind of the,
The common.
the common interpretation.
Yeah.
But the sources that you sent over, they suggest that it's a little bit more complicated than that.
Oh, it is much more nuanced than that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. To really understand Ecclesiastes, you have to like grapple with this word, this Hebrew word, habel,
Okay.
which is often translated as meaningless, but it literally means breath or vapor.
Breath.
Okay.
So it's not that life is meaningless, but that it's fleeting. Like
You
breath.
track.
It's here and then it's gone.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the author, I think, really drives this point home
Okay.
through the structure of the book itself.
Really?
Yeah,
Well, I'm so.
it's repetitive.
Yeah.
You know, it's cyclical, almost like the rhythm of breathing itself. It inhales these big questions about life, and then it exhales this kind of resigned acceptance of its limitations.
Okay.
And then it just repeats
Repeats the cycle.
over and over again. Yeah.
I never thought about it that way.
Right.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
So if life is like this fleeting breath, then what does that tell us about how we should approach our work, our relationships?
Right.
Even just, the simple pleasures of life, does it make it more important to enjoy them because they're temporary, or does it make them less important because,
Yeah, that is the question, isn't it?
yeah.
That's the million-dollar question. And I think the author of Ecclesiastes really grapples with that.
Okay.
Throughout the book,
Okay.
you see it in these phrases that recur,
Yeah.
under the sun,
Yeah.
chasing after the wind.
I'm a
What
prophet.
profit? Exactly.
Yeah.
And they all kind of highlight, these limitations of human experience.
Yeah.
Like, we're always striving for something that ultimately we just can't grasp.
Right. It's like,
Yeah.
it's almost a cautionary tale against putting all your hopes and dreams in things that are ultimately fleeting.
Temporary.
But I mean, but doesn't Ecclesiastes also say that even with those limitations, that there is still some beauty and goodness to be found?
Absolutely.
Like, that passage about finding satisfaction in your work,
Right.
even though it's all ultimately Hebel.
You're getting at a really crucial tension there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the author's saying, yes, life is fleeting, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't appreciate the gifts that we've been given.
Yeah.
The ability to work, to find pleasure in simple things, to connect with other people.
Yeah.
These are all blessings,
Yeah.
even if they don't last forever.
So it's not about like giving up on everything because it's temporary,
Right.
but it's more about finding a way to appreciate those fleeting moments of like
Yeah.
joy and satisfaction
Yeah.
within this bigger context of a life that is by its very nature impermanent.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's within that context that the author also starts to talk about the issue of injustice.
Okay.
The fact that we see so much pain and suffering in the world.
Yeah, for sure.
And it often feels like, the people who do wrong get away with it.
Yeah, it definitely makes you question what's the point of it all.
Yeah. Does Ecclesiastes offer any comfort on that?
Yeah, like, I mean, what does he say about that?
Well, he points to this reality of God's coming judgment.
Okay.
He doesn't shy away from the darker parts of human experience,
Yeah.
but he does hold on to this belief that ultimately there will be a reckoning.
Okay.
There will be a restoration of order.
So it's not just accepting the injustice that we see.
No, I don't think so. I think it's about acknowledging it,
Yeah.
wrestling with it, but ultimately holding on to that hope that God is just
Yeah.
and that justice will prevail,
Okay.
even if we don't see it, in our lifetime.
So it's kind of adding another layer to this whole living under the sun idea. Like, yeah, our time is limited, but
yeah,
there's this bigger picture. There's this bigger narrative that our lives are a part of.
It can be both humbling and empowering, I think.
Yeah, for sure.
It reminds us that, you know, we're not the center of the universe, but it also gives us a sense of purpose, knowing that our lives have meaning within that larger story.
So we're starting to see how even a book that, you know, sounds as kind of pessimistic as Ecclesiastes can actually offer a pretty nuanced perspective.
Yeah, definitely.
On how to navigate life.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it can be surprisingly liberating, too.
Okay.
Especially when you consider the other book that you brought.
Song of Songs.
Song of Songs, exactly.
Yeah.
Which I think is about as far from pessimistic as you can get.
From what I've heard, yeah, this is a completely different...
Get ready for a complete shift in tone.
Okay.
Yeah, because next we're diving into a world of joyful...
Okay.
Unabashedly sensual celebration of love.
All right. I'm intrigued. Let's do it.
Yeah.
Let's take that plunge. So we've just been talking about, you know, that idea of like life's fleeting nature in Ecclesiastes.
Yeah.
And now we're moving on to Song of Songs.
Yeah.
It's like a complete 180, right?
It's a total shift.
From what I've gathered from the stuff you sent over.
Yeah.
It seems like this book is offering a different perspective.
Uh-huh.
Not by like denying the reality of death,
right,
but by sort of like celebrating the intensity of love and the present moment.
Exactly. It's like, you know, stepping out of this dimly lit room into this vibrant garden.
Oh, garden.
Yeah.
Okay, that imagery, I'm already liking that.
Bursting with color and fragrance.
I like where this is going.
Yeah.
But before we get too lost in the metaphors, can you remind me why this book is called Song of Songs?
Oh, yeah, good point.
That sounds like a pretty big deal.
It is a big deal in Hebrew when you repeat a word like that.
Okay.
It signifies the highest degree of something.
Okay.
So Song of Songs basically means this is the most beautiful, the most passionate, like the peak of all love poetry in the Hebrew Bible.
Wow. So like the best of the best.
Yeah.
And I have to say, from the little bits that I've skimmed, it definitely lives up to its name. It does. Like, the imagery is so vivid.
It is, yeah.
And surprising. Like, I was reading this part where it compares a woman's hair to a flock of goats.
Oh, yeah.
Descending a mountainside.
That's a classic.
And then her teeth.
Yeah.
To a flock of, like, freshly shorn ewes.
Yeah.
I was like, what is going on here?
I know, right? You don't really see those kinds of comparisons in love poetry.
Not every day.
But that's what makes Song of Songs so unique.
Yeah.
It's not afraid to be bold.
Yeah.
To use these, like, you know, earthy images.
Yeah.
To really capture, like, you know, desire and beauty.
Yeah, it makes you rethink what's attractive.
Totally. No. It's not just about conventional beauty standards.
Yeah.
It's about appreciating, like, the raw, the natural beauty.
Yeah.
Of the human form.
And it's not just animals either.
No, it's not.
It's like flowers, spices, landscapes.
All of it. Yeah.
It's like this whole tapestry of
something. Exactly. And that's where that garden imagery you mentioned comes in.
Okay. Yeah.
The garden is so central to the symbolism of the book.
Okay.
It represents intimacy, security, the beauty of the natural world.
Yeah.
It's this space where love can, like, flourish and grow.
I'm starting to see how this book is kind of like a counterpoint to that living under the sun idea.
Right.
We were talking about with Ecclesiastes. Yeah. Like, the garden in Song of Songs is this refuge.
Yeah.
From the harsh realities of the world.
Exactly.
This place where love can be expressed and experienced.
Yes, it's like this secluded space.
Yeah.
A sanctuary where the lovers can escape, like, the constraints of society.
Uh-huh.
And explore their desires freely.
And there's another interesting thing about this garden imagery, too.
Oh, tell me.
Okay. So, at first, the garden is described as being, like, locked up.
Right.
Carefully guarded. And this is often interpreted as, like, representing the woman's virginity.
That's common interpretation.
But then the lover is allowed in.
Right.
So, it's not just about, like, a physical space.
No.
It's also about the progression of their relationship.
Yes.
From that initial attraction to a deeper, more intimate connection.
Yeah, and, you know, for a long time, Song of Songs was mostly interpreted allegorically.
Okay.
Like, as a representation of God's love for Israel.
Yeah, I can see how that fits.
Right.
But wouldn't focusing only on that kind of spiritual interpretation, like, miss the point in a way?
I think so.
I mean, this book is clearly celebrating human sexuality, like, as this beautiful, good gift from God.
I totally agree with you.
Yeah.
I think while the allegorical reading is important,
yeah,
we also have to acknowledge, like you said, the book's celebration of just human love and desire,
yeah,
in and of itself.
It's like reclaiming the beauty and the sacredness,
yes,
of physical love, which has often been downplayed or even demonized in like religious contexts.
Yeah, especially in the ancient world.
Yeah, weren't there all those fertility cults and rituals, yeah, that kind of exploited and distorted sexuality?
Totally.
Oh.
And that's where the work of scholar George Schwab gets really interesting.
Okay.
He argues that the book's focus on private consensual love,
uh-huh,
might actually be like a subtle critique,
okay,
of the more public and often exploitative sexuality that was associated with Baal worship.
Okay.
Which was really prevalent in the surrounding cultures.
So it's not just celebrating love.
Right.
It's also kind of setting boundaries around it. It's, yeah, saying like true intimacy,
yeah,
is something to be cherished, not exploited.
Exactly.
Which is a really powerful message.
It is.
Especially in that historical context.
Absolutely. It's like the author's making this distinction,
yeah,
between the sacredness of love within a committed relationship,
mm,
and the kind of corrupted forms of sexuality,
yeah,
that were so common back then.
And there's no mention of God in Song of Songs, right?
Yep.
Like no religious rituals or anything.
None whatsoever.
It's just this pure, unadulterated expression, yeah, of
human love.
Love and desire. Yeah.
It's interesting. It makes you wonder if the author was intentionally,
yeah,
like separating this experience,
no,
from the religious practices of the time.
Right.
Which often involved like ritualistic sex and even prostitution.
Yeah.
In the name of these fertility deities.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting possibility.
Yeah.
And you see that intentionality reflected in the language,
oh, yeah,
of the book, too.
Yeah.
It is.
It's so passionate, yeah, so sensual.
Yeah.
So unapologetically focused on the physical experience of love.
Absolutely. It's like the author is saying, this is beautiful.
Yeah.
This is good. This is something to be celebrated.
Yeah.
Not hidden away.
And it all kind of culminates in those powerful verses in chapter 8, right?
Oh, you mean verses 6 and 7?
Yeah. The ones that compare love to death.
In its intensity and power.
Yeah. Where it says, love is as strong as death.
Yes.
Its jealousy unyielding as the grave. It burns like a blazing fire, like a mighty flame.
Those lines are so evocative.
They are.
It's like they're saying that love is this unstoppable force,
yeah,
that can't be extinguished,
uh-huh,
that can even conquer death.
And in a way, it kind of does.
Yeah.
Not literally, of course.
Right.
But in the sense that love transcends time.
Yeah.
Even when someone we love dies.
Mm-hmm.
That love, we share the memories we made.
Yeah.
Those things live on.
So even though Song of Songs is celebrating the present moment,
yeah,
it's also acknowledging that love has this kind of immortality,
right,
this power that extends beyond our earthly existence.
It does.
Yeah, and that's what makes this book such a great companion to Ecclesiastes.
It really does.
They're both grappling with the realities of life and death,
yeah,
but they do it from such different perspectives.
Absolutely.
And by reading them together, we get this fuller picture of what it means to be human.
For sure.
We can acknowledge that life is fleeting,
mm-hmm,
and still choose to embrace the joy and beauty that exists in it.
It's about finding that balance,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Not denying the hard stuff,
yeah,
but not letting it overshadow the good either.
So how do we take these insights from Ecclesiastes and Song of Songs,
yeah,
and apply them to our own lives?
That's the big question.
That's what I'm left wondering. You know, it's kind of wild to think that these two books, like Ecclesiastes and Song of Songs, are both part of the same,
I know,
right, collection.
So amazing.
We've gone from, like, you know, really grappling with that idea of meaninglessness under the sun to, mm-hmm, like, embracing the power and the intensity of love.
Quite the journey.
It's a lot.
Yeah.
So as we wrap up this deep dive.
Okay.
What do you think is, like, the most important takeaway?
That's a great question.
For our listener.
And I don't know if there's, like, one easy answer.
Yeah.
But I think if I had to try to sum it up, it would be that it's about holding these two perspectives in tension.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay.
Recognizing that life is both fleeting and precious.
Okay.
That we are both finite,
yeah,
and capable of like this profound love and joy.
Mm.
It's not about choosing one over the other.
Yeah.
But it's about embracing that paradox.
So instead of trying to figure out if life is like ultimately meaningful or meaningless,
yeah,
maybe it's more about learning to just live,
right,
like fully in the midst of that uncertainty.
Exactly.
Savoring the good times, persevering through the hard times, and finding meaning in purpose in the everyday,
yeah,
even when it feels like, you know, everything is Hebel.
Yeah, you said it perfectly.
Yeah.
I think both Ecclesiastes and Song of Songs really give us guidance on how to do that.
Okay.
You know, Ecclesiastes reminds us to appreciate those simple gifts,
yeah,
even while acknowledging that they're temporary.
Yeah.
And Song of Songs encourages us to just embrace love,
yeah,
fully,
yeah,
to experience it deeply and powerfully,
oh,
knowing that even in a world where death exists, love kind of transcends those boundaries.
It's like these two books are giving us permission to be like fully human,
yeah,
to feel everything,
yeah,
to embrace the beauty, even while acknowledging the brokenness, and to find hope and joy even when faced with death.
Well said. I think that's a message we all need to hear.
Yeah, for sure.
Especially these days when things can feel so chaotic and uncertain.
Yeah. So for our listener out there who brought us these incredible texts,
yeah,
I have one last question for you to think about.
Okay.
If Ecclesiastes invites us to acknowledge the fleeting nature of life,
uh-huh,
and Song of Songs celebrates the intensity of the present moment,
yeah,
how can you hold those two seemingly contradictory ideas together,
right,
as you're navigating your own life?
Yeah.
How can you embrace both the beauty and the fragility of this one precious life that you've been given?
It really is something to think about, isn't it? And there's no easy answer.
No.
But I think the journey itself,
yeah,
you know, wrestling with these big questions, that's what leads us to a deeper understanding of ourselves and the world.
Well, thank you so much for diving in with us today.
It was my pleasure.
And to our listener, thank you for sharing these fascinating texts. We hope this deep dive has sparked some new insights for you.
Yeah.
Maybe even some new questions.
Yeah.
So until next time, keep exploring.
Yeah.
Keep questioning and keep seeking wisdom wherever you can find it.